Okay. So we do need to warm up a little. And as I pointed out before, Tyler popped on. This is, according to the Twitter, National Horny Day. So I have to put forth like a question to Johnny about your character, one that the fan Discord and fans on Twitter have been hotly debating. And I just want to know, what is Travis Madigo's ass like? Is it good or is it bad?
Oh, I think, okay.
Because before you answer, I want to know, you will make people mad. I feel like almost no matter what the answer is, you're going to make people mad.
I think it's like too good for like a man butt. You know what I mean? It's like, ooh, it's like too juicy.
Mm-hmm.
Too mm-hmm. juicy.
Like
I like this.
That okay. Like in a upsetting way?
I don't think it's upsetting, but it's like, it's just, you just like, you maybe do a double take and you're like, that's a little much. Maybe that's why he wears long coats to hide his juicy ass.
Oh. Travis has just been like saving the moment where like he can whip the coat back and just like strike a quick hit just to make people go, oh, come on.
He's wearing very tight pants under that coat.
It's like an anime. It's he's got a power up. All he needs to do is strip off his coat when it's really serious so he can show off his juicy donk.
Oh my God.
I think we should make sure that the restaurant closes up okay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Let's go over there. Well, I mean, it kind of already did.
Well, they dismissed the waiter and the head chef's not there. So that means that somebody is closing that restaurant.
The rats.
They're all singing like, oh, I love to clean the restaurant.
Restaurant clean.
And scrubbing on the windows, scrubbing on the chairs.
I like to clean the restaurant too.
Come on, my brother, who doesn't understand me, have you finally come around to my profession? Come on, everyone can clean the restaurant.
Like this?
Yes, you're doing it perfectly.
Okay, this scene is so calm. I want to focus on the hex where boats dock, because that is where the Uhuru is. I just want to see, like, what does the transformation look like as we're going to have a capital P party? And the thing that is important about this is, like, I think that the celebration is centered around the Uhuru, not only because, like, y'all won the competition and all that, but because there is a stage kind of being erected at the same time. So I just want to know, what does that look like from each of you? Just one little detail, one little morsel for me to worry over.
Is there a curtain on the stage?
There can be.
The curtain's made of feather weave, so like when it's time to like raise the curtain, like a fire lights sort of at the bottom of the stage, and then the curtain like flies up.
This is extremely dramatic. I mean, for a couple reasons, because the only, like, there is leftover feather weave on the Uhuru from what you initially captured, so this is going to be feather weave that like glows gold eventually, which is pretty wild and dramatic. The thing that I need all of you to remember in other circumstances, because there is kind of a perfect excuse for it right now, featherweave is rare and expensive and not the sort of thing that you would use to make a curtain with.
Which but again, is why this is so special.
This is very special. And this is for Bathroom Barry's one-man musical, I believe it was going to be. So This is like we're seeing sort of a tech demonstration of how this is going to work. We see like a bunch of like little fires like spring up across the stage. In fact, I think the lower stage throughout the whole show, there's just going to be a fire there. That's what Barry wants. That's how Barry initially pictured it. So yeah, we see boom, 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 and the curtain rises and shimmers a little bit. As we prepare for that to be the opening moment, what else is going on here?
I like the idea, and maybe not in this situation, but for like theatrical presentations, everyone is standing kind of like Globe Theater style. But part of that is because theater is a little bit competitive in this world. So if there is a performance going on and someone is super convinced, like, I could do that better. They have the ability to like either yell out or like push an actor away and be like, no, it's God. Me now.
Anyone can Apollo anybody and just like end their show.
And it's all like, it's like all audience response. It's like, I agree. I don't think that man is Hamlet. Come on.
This is an extraordinary thing to add to the universe because of kind of the established origins of theater that we already have. I love it. I love it. What a wild thing to just be sort of tolerated culturally throughout at least the parts of Sphere where skyships are frequented. It's the theater culture is, yeah, if you are sitting in the audience and you think you could do a better job, there is a way for you to sort of tag into a performance.
And like the great actor's like, I've never been replaced.
Yes. Try your best.
The funny part to me is that like our world's Globe Theater is at the Silver Chalice, which is an erotic theater, which is very funny to me that is a culture that arrived out of there. Dude, I'm way hotter than them. I should be in this show. good.
I think I want to like just add to that, Liz, where I feel like during the show, there is like this sort of competitive aspect of it. But if like, I feel like if you make it to the end of the show, I feel like in the time that people are getting up and leaving, there's maybe like a 10 to 15, 20 minute like time span where like the stage is open. And that's where like a lot of, if there are kids there, they usually like rush the stage and like do their version of what they just saw. Or it's like a way to like, hey, did you remember this thing that you just saw? Ugh. And yeah.
Ooh. So it's they do the show and then there's space to do a fun through immediately after the show that you just saw. Yeah. You can do a parody of the show that you just saw.
Mm-hmm. Do they have props, not the actual props they use for the show, but like, if it was a sword, it'd be like foam, like a pool noodle or whatever to use as swords. You know what I mean?
I like the idea that theater culture on Sphere is just like you do the show and then there is an immediate invitation kind of right after to do a worse version of the show.
Yeah.
And they've prepared worse costumes and props for everyone. That's just what every show needs to do.
Well, I feel like for the actual show, there's like real props and real costumes. Mm-hmm. And then... Mm-hmm. They just kind of have a bin like they have at Comedy Sports or whatever that they kind of use for any show. That's just like, here's a bunch of crap that you can play with.
It started out where it's like, no one was like buying, when they were selling all the props from like old productions, no one was buying them. And then it just became like practice to just like, all right, we're going to hold on to them, but also like tear them up, fuck them up. Like give us an excuse to like destroy these things.
So then I think what this is signaling to me is that sort of night that they're putting up the production, Bathroom Barry, took a look at it and decided this isn't a one-man show anymore. I need a full cast.
Oh.
And there's like a last-minute addition of a cast to this show in an extremely bold and extremely Bathroom Barry move. Now it is a full cast production. So, you know, they're setting up the stage. It's got these beautiful elements. They're preparing the post-show prop boxes for the audience to have their fun with the show afterwards, as is tradition, as we understand is common for all Sphere.
As is canon.
Yeah, that's canon. That's how it works. So we've got that. Are there any other details that we want to add to like this picture before I jump in with what's going next?
I feel like the intro to the show is like done by... nope, never mind. I was going to say it's done by the whoever won the latest Tornado Calling, but we're kind of describing Sphere theater culture and like as a whole instead of like Ngoni.
Well, you know, then we can split the difference though and say that like Bathroom Barry has, after watching the Tornado Calling here, Bathroom Barry is like, I need this for my show. This is my vision. I've watched this art of dance on stage. Okay. Like, the problem with Bathroom Barry is he has this vision of a perfect show, but it's so perfect he can't even see it. Ugh. And as soon as he saw Dancing and Tornado Calling, he's like, this is it. This is what I've been waiting for. This is how I need to open my show.
It sounds like Bathroom Barry didn't really put a lot of thought into this until like the last couple minutes, and he's just kind of being inspired by whatever.
I think he put too much thought into this. You know, like there's the difference between having like the dream opus in your head and actually having to put it up and realizing that, you know, in Barry's case, he kept limiting himself and pulling back, but he keeps getting the things that he needs and then more so. So he's just like, yeah, well, if we've got access to the dancers, let's put the dancers up. Let's get the dancers going. So yeah, all of that is happening. Like there is drinking and carousing around as the stage is being erected. There are Tornado Calling dancers like doing their warm-ups, prepping to go on stage. There are people who are from the Uhuru crew like pacing very quickly back and forth trying to memorize their lines. I think Wendell is there. Wendell has one line in this show and he just keeps saying it 1,000 times over and over in 1,000 different inflections. Watch out! Watch out! Ouch! Watch out! Just like trying to nail it perfectly. Meanwhile, nearby the stage, we see a lineup of the crew of the glass. We see Spit walking with his hands behind his back. He's clearly doing a walk-by inspection. And we follow Spitz's gaze down as he sees these very polished black leather shoes that everybody's wearing, and a slow pan up as Spit is walking down the line. And we reveal, of course, that everyone from the glass is being dressed in stereotypical French-made outfits for the cleanup.
Why do we have those?
Have we established...
If you have to ask why I have all these, you haven't been paying attention.
Okay, man.
you know why, and you know why I'm making everybody wear them now.
No. But also, Spit, you have 50 plus full uniforms.
Have we established the Sphere version of France?
We haven't. I mean,
we have like, had French.
We don't need to. I'm just curious.
Accents. We have had French people.
That's true.
Yeah, and in some bonus content that is currently mid-production, we have at least a region that is France-like, where there are more French accents. But the thing that we've typically been doing with a lot of our cultural world building surrounding European cultures is we've just been mashing them up together. The only Nordia is not really an exception because it's kind of like all Norwegian countries got smashed together.
Mm. Yeah, every Norwegian country like Norway and...
Well, I mean, you know exactly what I mean. I don't need to explain myself to you.
I'm the fucking boss.
My house.
Wait a minute.
Because we got Switzerland, Sweden, and all those places all mashed up into Nordia. So we could do a mashup between France and somewhere else, which could be a little fun. But we also don't need to decide that right now. Johnny did look like he had an idea, though.
Well, so I'm thinking of specifically these sexy little outfits. And
these fun little numbers.
Who is it?
What if it was like the cut and style of that we're all familiar with for the sexy outfit, mm-hmm. but then right. it has like warmer, brighter Spanish colors. So we've got like some Spain and France mixed together.
Ooh, okay. I got some Spain in your France. You got some France in my Spain.
Mm-hmm.
Two great tastes that probably taste great together. Yeah. So they're just colorful. They're very like colorful, but they are the French made cut.
I have one more question that's significantly less important. How did we as a world people land on, at one point did maids in France really wear the sexy outfit or something like it? You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, I when I think of that outfit, I typically think of it as being the outfit of a servant in a English household. So I don't know. Maybe there was a period where wealthy British people were importing maids from France. I don't know. I don't know.
Just something to think about.
I won't.
Someone knows the answer to this. There is someone out there listening to this right now that is like shaking their podcatch downloading device and screaming the correct answer.
In France, we just call them maids.
Oui.
Spit has like lined up, inspected the crew of the glass. All right, I'm going to be honest. The work that you're about to go through in there, it's not going to be pleasant. It's not going to be easy. The only place on that ship that has seen a cleaning in an acceptable time window is the bathroom. Everything else needs a thorough, deep clean. Some of you might not make it back alive. But those of you that don't will be remembered as heroes.
There's like a snare drum boy just
we cut to 20 years in the future, a little kid, maybe not 20 years, I don't know, we cut to some point in the future, I can't figure it out, I don't care. A little kid is with his parent and they're going up to a big memorial that has a bunch of names engraved in it, and they put a piece of paper over their other parent's name who died while cleaning this ship and scribble over it.
Oh, no.
Matt Damon is cleaning the floor and you see his face transform into an old man.
So good.
So we get a montage of the crew of the glass cleaning the ship, and it is like a montage that we would have for a battle. Like there is, you know, you got Barney McGee kind of on his knees swabbing the deck by hand, and like this is just for effect, and we're gonna say very, because I don't think this scene is well shot, I think it is pretty tacky, Zack Snyder style, like slow motion freeze frames,
yep,
of like,
yep,
explosions and whatnot happening.
So
as
since
people are cleaning,
since it's Zack Snyder style, all these colorful uniforms do just look like traditional French maid uniforms.
I really want to point out that when we see the lineup, they are colorful. When we see them in action, all of the color has been
all
drained
the life
from the screen. And I really want to convey to our audience that in this scene, there were jokes. They were removed. They were removed. There are fewer jokes in this. There are no jokes appearing in this. But yeah, like we see this explosion in swapping the deck. We see Brian Boru at the heart bell. He's got like a little toothbrush. He's like scrubbing off some of the names in the heart bell. I think, again, because we're going with Zack Snyder on this one, there is a slow sort of contemplative emotional arrangement of a familiar pop song that's playing. Johnny, you are our pop music expert. What do we have a slow emotional remix of playing?
I mean, this is a real song, but the first thing that comes to mind is the version of the Tears for Fears song that's in fucking Donnie Darko.
Oh,
What is it? I find it kind of funny. I find it kind of sad. But that's a real one. So if you want me to come up with another one. Oh.
Yeah, I do want you to come up with another one in the same style.
I think that it's probably is it an even sadder version of Lucky by Britney Spears?
Yes. There we go. That's it.
She's so lucky. She's a star.
Yeah. So, we're getting explosions. We're getting, like, just looks of anguish on everyone's face as they are cleaning. There's sweat dripping down. I think there is a moment where we have Boudica is cradling one of her crewmates who's, like, passed out in her arms, like, just crying to the heavens there are like feathers from a feather duster, which I want to point out, these feather dusters, they're not like ostrich feather dusters or whatever that they were like colorful feather dusters.
Peacock feather dusters.
These are
dusters.
Feathers like taken from a parrot or something like that. Okay. But again, they have been drained of color for this Zack Snyder directed montage. And so Boudica is just like cradling in her arms this person whose face is like covered in feathers.
A feather now floats down, lands in a pool of blood.
Yes, yeah. Well, I mean that is the scene that indicates to us that somebody has died, because like it is that perfect metaphor of somebody dying with like a little feather just floating down to the ground.
And then after the feather sits on the ground for a minute, a gust of wind blows it, and then you follow the feather, and then it lands in front of that little kid in front of the memorial. That's how we see them.
Yeah. Zach is definitely having his day intercutting between the future and the past on this one. But yeah, you know, why did we do this? Well, people demanded it, and apparently you just give in to those. So we cut over to Liz. I want you to confront Ku now here, I think.
Okay.
This is a good place to confront Ku. And should it happen in Dreff's office or the captain's quarters?
Probably not the captain's quarters.
Okay.
Because that's...
Like in the aviary? Like where on the ship? Because you got to come gloat, I think is.
Oh, yeah, the aviary. I think what's happening is that I'm a floor above him and he's trying to clean and I keep on like dropping hay on top of him, like, oh, you missed a spot. You missed a spot, sir.
Can Flea, like, shit on command?
Oh, yeah. All the birds are just, like, deliberately making a mess, like, kicking out hay and pellets at him.
Yeah. Like, the thing is, I feel like maybe Flea could shit on command or something, but, like, Lucas is smart enough to understand when someone is cleaning his pen and definitely has the motivation to make that job a nightmare.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
So I think we see Ku Cullen. We can see the woad of his tattoos. We can see that his hair has been pulled back into a top knot, you know. Like, top knot can look fine on some people. Ku has a way of making it look a little bit douchey. Mm. Everything about this outfit is rolled up. And like he's just finished cleaning the floor, and like Lucas like kind of pecks at a bale of hay, and the string that's binding it like comes loose, and it just explodes all over the floor. And Gable is above, kind of looking down at Koo. What do you do, Gable? What do you say?
I don't think I've ever seen someone be so owned.
Oh, aye, you never seen someone so owned. Well, then, good for you.
Oh, you can bite back. It's okay. I won't tell on you. You don't need to be polite to me just because I'm better than you in every way.
Mr. Gable, if I were to show you that you're not better than me, I think there's a very good chance one of us wouldn't walk away from that.
Oh, you've already shown your hand several times over.
You only saw the start. You don't know how far I could take it.
Oh.
And you wouldn't want to know. Oh. It would break your precious little heart to
see. Oh. Well, you missed a spot. That's Gable kicking over a jug of mead.
Oh, man. Yeah. So, like, the mead pours across the floor. That's going to stain. I'm going to have to sand down the boards. No. And I think Koo takes the rag and, like, slaps it into the mead and just, like, splashes some of the mead at Gable, at whatever Gable is wearing right now. What is the party outfit that gets ruined?
What do I have? Regular shirts? I'm not sure, because they're all tits out. I think I borrowed a very fancy white shirt that is that was supposed to be like my fun party shirt, and it's just nice enough. Like, this is going to be impossible to wash. I'm going to have to hand wash this. I'm never going to do that. It's going to be at the bottom of my hamper for weeks. What is wrong with you?
What's wrong with me? What's wrong with you?
What's wrong with
you? I try to tell a few good-natured jokes and you turn it into an enter-ship incident. And then I try to have a bit of a dance with you and you throw me to the ground like some kind of a meteor, and you tie my hair into a net with your vicious little animal friend.
You decided to be an asshole, and I've been in retaliation to you being an asshole for the past 24 hours, and I have proceeded to fight you and beat you, and every which way I have forced you to bend to my will, and yet you are still here, and you won't go away, and I can't stop thinking about you and how much I don't care for you.
Koo, like, steps up to Gable, you know, and this, it looks like a typical we're about to fight step up. And you can see his eyes, and you can see them change. I want you to make a perception check, Liz.
Cool, Cullen. Oh, God, my perception. Laughable.
Gable sees that Koo has hair.
Yes. What's the difficulty?
I am going to put it at hard.
Well, odds are not in my flavor. Oh, that is... Oh, interesting. That is a success and two threats.
Oh, God, this is perfect. So you see Koo's eyes, and you see a flicker in them. At first, you know, there is a possibility that it could have just been the change of the light or something. And especially because we're just coming off of the Zack Snyder directed scene, maybe some color is just starting to leak back into our narrative. So you're noticing that for the first time. But after you study harder, you realize that it's true. Koo's eyes are, I think normally they're probably like a sort of steely lighter green, but they start to shift into a dark and almost glowing emerald as you stare into them. And Gable, during the even their best moments, is kind of making connections between things is not their strong suit. They have other people around them to do that. They don't normally need to bother with it. But you have seen this green before. This green is a similar green to what the raven who visited the Uhuru all those days ago to bring that message wore. This green is a similar green to the one that the Morrigan uses to decorate her outfits. This green flares up in Ku's eyes. And the thing that you notice about it, there is something inside you, deep and instinctual, that feels called to this. Almost as though you were made for this. Right now, looking at Ku, you can see the green of the Morrigan in his eyes starting to flare up, the sparks living behind it, as he moves towards you and grabs your shirt in his fist, holding it tightly. He is not pulling you. He is not moving you down to him. He is looking up at you because Ku, as tall and imposing as he is shorter than Gable and certainly less imposing. But the flare of his eyes bores into yours. What does Gable do with that?
Interesting. I don't think they know enough to make a connection that, like, this may not be all him in there. So when Ku grabs their shirt, I think Gable grabs him by the forearm and puts enough pressure on in a way that it's dipping down into their own berserkerness, their own situation, in a way that's indicating, like, you should stop.
Yeah. Oh, man. So, like, you do that. Gable's eyes dilate a little bit. It's not quite the full angelic, you know, my pupils have overtaken everything, but it is wide, almost like a cat's eyes, the way they just take over everything. And your eyes and his look into each other's, and you place that hand on his arm and squeeze and basically, like, pull yourselves back from the brink. And Ku is now breathing heavily. You know, Berserker, generally speaking, after you are done with that, you feel pretty exhausted. Ku pulls back, his eyes return to that, you know, steely, serene green. He's still got this bit of your shirt balled up in his fist. Well, if you'll have to hand wash it, I can take care of that for you. And he instead, like, starts to undo some of the toggles on Gable's shirt. And I feel like we can fade away on that cut. Hey heroes, it's James, your game master, and welcome to the mid-roll. Let's get things started off with a radvertisement. This one comes to us from your fam, Mads, Lark, Fen, Light, and Rat, and it goes out to bees! Buzz buzz, bitch, we're doxing your ass in the podcast you made us all listen to. So listen up, you gorgeous gremlin. Happy freaking birthday! You better enjoy your day and keep living big. Go out into the great big woods and cause your chaos mischief. We'll be right there beside you, hero. Take flight. Well, I think that message is just wonderful. Aggressive and confusing, but wonderful. Bees, I sincerely hope you enjoyed it because it used some words that I do not normally carry in my personal lexicon. And I'm not 100% that I can confidently pull them off, even after taking several takes to do it. It sounds like you have some wonderful friends that have your back no matter what. And really, that's what piracy is all about. Big thanks to Bees Fam for supporting the show, and big thanks to Bees for spreading the good word about Skyjacks and getting more people to listen. Heroes, I have a new book out this month, The Ultimate RPG Game Master's World Building Guide, a collection of prompts, activities, and mini-games to help you customize your game world for role-playing. If you like the world building we do here on Skyjacks, and you want a fun and easy way to add to your own game worlds, then this is the book that you've been waiting for. You can pick it up right now anywhere books are sold, on all major online retailers, at major brick-and-mortar bookstores, and of course, your friendly local indie brick-and-mortar. To find a listing of places you can get it, you can head to bit.ly/ultimateworldbuilding. And if you already have yourself a copy, you could do me a huge favor and head over to Amazon and Goodreads and leave a review. You don't need to have picked up a book on Amazon in order to review it there. And trust me, my publisher takes Amazon reviews very seriously, and it would be a huge help if you could leave one. I am trying to get to 50 reviews within the first month of the book's release, because that lets my publisher know that I am doing a good job. And special to Skyjacks listeners, if you give me a screenshot of your review, and tell me one of your favorite characters on the show, that is not a PC, you know, character that I control, I'll tell you a little fact about him. Why not? Let's see how that works. That might get overwhelming, but we will see how it works. Definitely for the first big group of people that does it, I will try to hit everyone. If you want to see the book in action, you can join me on June 23rd because I'm going to be doing a live streaming event with Barbara's Bookstore at 6 p.m. Central Time. I'll be joined by my good friend, fantasy author Alexandra Rowland, where we'll be going through some of the exercises in the book to create a world of our own. It's sure to be a lot of fun, and I'd love to have a bunch of heroes come out and watch us do it. Once again, that'll be June 23rd at 6 p.m. Central Time. You can follow the link in our show notes to register for the event. Before we get back to the show, I want to take a quick moment and thank all of our backers on Patreon. I am working on getting the list of individual names. I'm sorry, I cannot do it on my own, and I keep forgetting to ask for help when help is available. But it will be done soon. In the meantime, I hope everyone enjoyed our Patreon bonus content with the crew from Skyjacks Courier's Call and Patrick Rothfuss, our very own Jolly Jack. I'm super excited about how that series came out. And I've got good news, we have already recorded the next bonus series. That has not yet gone into editing, but it will soon. I'm expecting that one to start airing sometime in July. A huge thank you to everyone who supports us on Patreon already. We wouldn't be able to make this show without you. And a thank you to folks who are going to join us on the Patreon soon. Now, with all of that out of the way, let's get back in the sky. I want to see the crowd watching Bathroom Barry's performance. This performance, we've built up a lot for this. There's part of me that thinks, like, there's no way that this can go but well.
Yeah. I feel like in the end, like, people will walk away. It was like, oh, that was that a masterpiece? Holy shit. Oh my God.
I have been changed.
His first name is Bathroom. Who knew he had it in him?
I think that there's maybe someone who wants to try and do that, like, replace the actor thing.
Oh, yes.
And they're like about to, and then something happens on stage, and then they just start like crying because it was so like moving. Yes. Like they're like,
how could I have even dreamed?
Yeah, I think sort of mid-performance, some of the ships that were docked around the stage area have like undocked and been navigated closer so that you can fit more audience. They are sort of now balcony seats.
Yes.
For what's happening. There are people from Ungoni. There are people from the Tempest. There is any members of the crew of the Uhuru that are not like drawn into the performance itself are sitting and watching. There is not a dry eye in the house at this point. And I feel like this is kind of a marathon thing. Like, yes, normally theater has these highs and lows and whatnot, but imagine just like 20 minutes of straight tears. Some of them are tears of sorrow from emotions that have unmoored you. Some of them are tears of joy, tears of laughter. All the emotions that you can possibly experience watching a piece of theater, they're so intense, they can only be expressed through weeping.
There's a moment where it's like, we just see tears of sorrow, tears of joy, people like one single tear, like just like very resolutely nodding yes. And then we like do like a quick cut to the stage, and like Barry's just doing like a slap percussion hip slap routine. I'm on the deck. I'm on the deck.
Applause breaks throughout, like
yes.
Ovations that last way too long. We have to continue the show. Please stop.
And it reaches the end of the performance, that final number where there is a dream ballet happening from the Ungoni Tempest Calling dancers. There is like singing from the crew of the Uhuru.
It's an orphan's children's chorus.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
The first ever performance of the Uhuru Orphan Children's Choir.
They're the ones singing Lucky.
Yes.
Lucky.
Yes.
She's a star. But she cries in her lonely heart.
And you've got Barry there, center stage. The light is hitting him perfectly. Sweat is pouring from his brow. He is giving everything to this performance. And it reaches the crescendo, the swell, and then the fade. And there is no applause. There is no cheering. There's no clapping afterwards. What happens instead is flowers are thrown from the audience. Oh. And so many flowers are thrown at the stage and heap themselves upon the stage that it replaces the thunderous applause. It's just so many blooms hit the stage as Barry gets buried up to his chest in flowers, like in that final pose. It is magnificent. It is transformative. It makes everyone realize all of the beautiful things they already have in their life and want to live as better people the next day. It is the epitome of art.
Chris Jones gives it 2 stars.
Yeah, well, you know, you can't please everybody. So yeah, in the fallout of all of this artistry, of everybody kind of having witnessed this absolutely life-changing bit of theater, we pull back over the crowd and watching silently and stoically, but there's definitely an impact that it had, is Orimar Vale. And Orimar Vale turns across the crowd to see Sifa seated not far away. The two make eye contact with one another and they fade back from the crowd and find a quiet corner of Ungoni just between them. Sifa and Orimar stare into each other's eyes beneath the sparse and scattered stars, beneath the bright moonlight over Ungoni, and Orimar raises his hands as if to begin to sign, and Sifa raises her hand to stop him. I know that you have much to say to me. And I believe I have a similar amount that must be said to you. But right now, I can't imagine either of us walking away from this conversation feeling satisfied with what we are able to say. I am going to depart from this port tomorrow. And when I depart, it will be to oversee the construction of Ironside ships that will fulfill the ambition that sparked our partnership so long ago. You, I imagine, will leave to follow your own ambitions. Come back to me when you are able to talk through all the things that must be spoken through. Come back to me when you are ready to say all the things that you are ready to say. I will wait for that. And Orimar's hands lower down, and the two stare at each other once more. He steps towards her, and she steps towards him. And then they just turn and go their separate ways. I think I want to see just other people on the crew.
Have we seen, like, Nodo's drunk?
No.
I feel like he's usually smoking rope.
Yeah.
That's right. Okay. Okay. Well, then I like the idea of, like, there's maybe a moment where Jonnet is just kind of, like, milling about, and then, I don't know, he, like, steps outside to, like, get some air, and then, like, he's going for, like, a tiny little stroll, and then looks down, like, an alley or something like that, and, like, Nodos is just kind of, like, standing in the alley, just kind of, like, looking up, and Jonnet, like, goes up to Nodos, like, hey! Hey, Nodos, what's going on? And then he looks into Nodos' eyes, and Nodos is stoned.
Do you ever feel, looking at the stars, that they are looking back? That they have seen your actions and weighed them?
Nodos? And Jonnet puts his hand, like, very delicately on his shoulder. If the stars have seen what you've done, then they've also seen why you've done them. And I think it probably means that they would forgive you for the actions that you've taken.
Nodos takes like a huge drag of rope.
It goes from like a foot long of rope to like 6 inches.
Like a cartoon cigar.
Yes. I'm going to leave you, and if you need me, I'll be close by.
Nodos just nods.
If they are seeing the things that I have done and why I have done them, then I must see why they have done the things they have done.
And Nodos is just there.
Yeah, know what?
Having his moment.
Walk away.
And Jonnet, Jonnet, he turns around, he starts to walk away, and then there are several moments of, like, he slows down, looks back around, and is like, nah, he's fine. And then he keeps walking, and then he turns back around, and then he sees that Nodos has, like, sitting cross-legged, fully, like, straight up, still looking at the stars, like, he's fine. He turns around, and he looks back one more time, and now Nodos is, like, on the ground, like, laying. It's like, he'll be there. He'll be there tomorrow.
He'll be fine. Gosh.
I think now we are ready for morning. We get this cool transition shot of, like, day spilling over Ungoni as some people have clearly celebrated throughout the evening. We can see in the morning the glass. There are people who are, you know, taking their wounded, at least one of their dead, back onto the glass, having thoroughly cleaned the Uhuru.
One person is just like, this can never happen again.
you know, but like, I think the crew of the glass, like generally speaking, it is an embattled crew. They come from a culture that has been dealt harsh blows by the world. These are people who found each other and found their ship after, you know, being assaulted by the world around them, by people who looked at their homes, at the people that they lived their lives with, at their lives, and saw things that they could take and took whatever actions they could to take them. They are no stranger to battle, and cleaning your ship was a battle. And these people have at least coped with that life by reveling in it. So while they limp away, covered in bandages and having barely survived, there is a pride radiating off them as we can see them staring back at the Uhuru with its features and fixtures glowing warmly in the sunlight. I want to know, where is Travis as he is about to watch the sunrise?
I mean, maybe like the crow's nest of the ship. You know, he spent a lot of time there lately.
Yeah. And Travis, I just got to ask this. We have the dawn of a new day. We're about to enter a new arc, as it were. I feel like the seasons may have changed from spring.
Mm.
What animal form emerges?
Can we pull a luminary or some card to just tell us the season?
Yeah, hold on here. Hang on here. I don't have an Illimat deck, so I'm trying to figure out what course.
Well. Someone forgot his Illimat deck.
For
campaign Skyjacks the podcast? Mm.
I didn't forget it. I can't find it right now.
Well.
I think we have winter here.
Okay.
You're up in the crow's nest, like near your snake tube, but like a chill breeze moves through the air as you begin your transformation. Just another question, because this is the option that Travis has now. Did you make any preparations for this transformation?
I feel like there wasn't really time yet.
So, you know, Travis feels the pain of his bones turning to goop. We have the familiar cracking and snapping as he transforms into a rabbit. Then we move to Jonnet. Jonnet, where are you?
It's the next morning. I feel Jonnet is checking in on No-Dos. He's kind of like shaking him back awake. Hey, bud, how you doing? And then we just see like a maybe a wide shot of them in the alley. Like No-Dos gets up, and then it actually wouldn't make sense because No-Dos is much taller than Jonnet. But like,
I kind of like the idea that Jonnet, like maybe No-Dos passed out in that alley. And like Jonnet had kind of like had to enlist the help of friends to move No-Dos, but basically it took them all night to like get him into the ship.
It's just he's just a big floppy tall man and just a being guided around. Like it's like Weekend at Bernie's, but just they can't reach the top of him, so his top half is definitely always over.
I think the people that helped you, it just makes the most sense. We see Johnny and we see Grace O'Malley. Like everyone is tired. Like sun is starting to pour in across the desert to Ungoni itself. The three of you are absolutely fucking wrung out, exhausted. But it's that kind of like post-party exhaustion, something that really only exists in your teens and your 20s, where you still feel kind of good even though you're tired. You just spent all night like talking to your friends as you were going about the ridiculous task of moving this gangly ass man from some random alley that he passed out in back onto the ship.
I feel like in the last leg of this endeavor, at one point they're like going, and then Johnny's just like, wait, what the fuck are we doing? And then we hard cut to No-Dos is now like suspended up by all everyone's different gliders, and the wind is kind of just like dragging him. His feet are still like on the ground, but like as the wind is kind of lazily dragging him towards the Uhuru, and then we get a shot of just like Johnny and Jonnet doing like a little fist bump. Like, that was pretty sweet.
Yeah. Absolutely.
The floating passed out man just.
He's like a bit. This is like a little bit like a Macy's Day Parade float, I imagine. Like, they've tied these kites to him, so he's like a little bit hanging off the ground, and like you gotta. And I like the idea that like you had this idea at like 1 a.m. or something at 2 a.m. So most of the night was just figuring out how to engineer getting this stuff onto him. It wasn't necessarily that you spent all this time doing that. It's like you spent hours sort of rigging this up, and now finally the time is to pay off is like 6 a.m. or whatever.
I know that life.
So yeah, a great night was had by all. Jonnet definitely feels like he was in the engineering kids club. Like, this is the sort of nerd activity that I can easily see him getting embroiled in. Yeah. So then we cut to Gable.
In an inn somewhere. There's a big picture window. Gable is looking out on it over the sky and the boats that are floating, and you pan over and see in the bed Ku is just knocked out asleep, snoring like a demon, and Gable just kind of like settles themselves, and then they realize, like, for the first time in like 3 days, they can finally process everything that's happened, and it's a very lonely moment.
Gable, I think you were looking out that big picture window, and now, you know, the party has kind of wound down, and a lot of excitement has wound down too, as this is a pretty big cap. You have spent, from the moment that you captured this cargo from the civility, there was a big question hanging in the air of whether or not you would be able to resolve it, whether or not you would be able to bring you and your crew the thing that you earned after taking such a risk. And in that time, you know, you have thought about fleeing. You thought about abandoning everyone and just taking a bird and flying off into the night. You've seen people die. You've lost people who were close to you. You have changed your relationship with people who you have known for ages upon ages. But still, there is something in you that you are trying to unravel, something that you are worrying at. And you are very alone with that thing, looking out the window, up at the one still thing in the sky, the ever-present morning star. Liz, I want you to describe to me, I feel like Gable just has a feeling about the morning star. And the toughest thing for Gable is that it is a complicated feeling. There isn't a clear thing that you feel when looking at it, but you are compelled by it, drawn to it in some way. You've got this bit of ennui right now where you feel very lonely and isolated with yourself. And I think kind of this is going to indicate a little bit of what your journey is going to have to be in the next arc or so. What is Gable feeling here?
I think it is. So the thing that Orimar has, what do we call it? The helm or?
The crown.
The crown. I think that was unlocking of like a core memory there. Not actually remembering, but like that's that tether, like seeing that and not knowing what it is the same as seeing the morning star and not knowing what that is, but knowing that there is something moving cosmically with a great sense of power and connection that feels very tied to them, but also if they wanted to, they could just sort of ignore it. Like, I'm not part of this anymore. This is not me. And it is only just now that they're realizing how inextricable that feeling is from what the rest of their life is going to be. Because otherwise, if they don't actually explore that, if they don't actually engage with this huge tether, something is going to happen to their life that is going to, it's kind of the feeling of inevitability. Like, either I will die or I will address this.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. Here's where I think we're at then. There is a change in Gable from the past. I think, you know, we have seen Gable try to, when confronted with a hint of their past, just like gather up things, abandon the ship and fly away. You were compelled to stay with the ship through the maelstrom because you were afraid the people around you would get hurt. Now, kind of everybody who is important in your life knows what is up. They know what is up with you, and they have their own stuff embroiled in this wild cosmic nonsense that has been weighing on you for so long. So I feel like the tone of your connection is different now. So like you're in this loneliness, like you're sitting with yourself in the morning. The morning star is pouring down at you, staring into you. You are kind of staring back. What does Gable do immediately after having kind of that existential moment? Huh.
This is going to be a little bit nuts. They feel that, and there's a candle right next to them, and so they look at the tattoo that they got back in
Bourgeoneth.
And like really quickly, they find a needle, stick it into the flame, and then start trying to do a very quick stick and poke to try and cover it up.
Oh, wow. Cool. We do that, and I think the audience like sees that this is going to happen, but we cut away from it before it does. So like we see, you know, Gable get hit with this ennui, maybe this feeling of small, vulnerable, and lonely looking at the morning star. Then they become hard and resolute, and we cut away. We cut away to see Ungoni, the floating hexes of this magnificent, beautiful city, as skyships start to light their furnaces. Around the city, we can see the flames pour into the heat funnels, up into the envelopes, and the weave begin to spill out in a beautiful crimson, eventually glow as the ships take off and start to move in their separate directions, going secret places on Sphere where the Tempest Armada begins to lay its next plans. And of course, the final envelope that we see is that of the Uhuru. The weave glows a brilliant, beautiful crimson as it takes off to the sky. We can see the folks rushing about the top deck, beginning the preparations on the lines. We move through to the cargo hold where we can see all of the magnificent treasures brought to the Uhuru by the Tempest Armada are secured. And then we move through the ship to the captain's quarters, to the map set in before Orimar Vale, to the captain's council surrounding him. I think actually as we move through the bowels of the ship, we definitely saw that Bathroom Barry is, you know, back in his place of comfort, where he has some sort of small keepsake from the dream show that he always wanted to do and managed to enact exactly to his vision. But other than that, everything about his life is unchanged because it was already so much what he wanted out of life. What is that small keepsake?
I mean, I feel like it's like a feather, but the feather has been like, oh, wait, because we have like these like massive trees in Ungoni that
Sita trees.
Is it too much to be like, hey, you could preserve a flower in like by dipping it in that tree sap?
Oh, that's perfect. I love that. Yeah, it's one of the flowers preserved with Sita sap, which, you know, it's almost like an instant amber. It's a very, very cool effect. and that is tucked into one of these fat cherubic babies that we've got as kind of the general decorative air for the Uhuru bathroom. I'm going to rule because, like, we did talk about the fact that the sink is like little cherubs peeing, right? Like that's how the sink works. I think those
like
cherubs,
at a book and a Beppo, yeah.
Yeah. I think those cherubs are like the general decorative air for the bathroom. So there is like a wall sconce that is one of these cherubs. But I also kind of want the cherubs of Sphere to be a little bit horrifying. Mm-hmm. Like they are a little bit more like actual biblical descriptions, like some Enoch 4-ass descriptions of angels. So it's got the general kind of baby-esque look, but it's got like way too many eyes, and like those eyes are suns and stuff like
what
that.
Is this? What? Why did we make these frescoes?
But definitely, like in its chubby little fingered hand, we've got this beautiful preserved flower. So we cut from bathroom Barry's bathroom to the captain's quarters, to the map and Orimar Vale. Orimar sort of like stands over the map. There are some to his side. Like I think at his side we have Spit on one side. Who's going to be on his other side?
I mean, like, Jonnet's got to be there working on that map.
Yeah, yeah. It's Spit on the captain's right hand, Jonnet on the captain's left hand, both of them staring intently at the map. Where is Gable, Liz?
By the door. I think that's going to be always their defensive position.
Yeah, Gable is, like, tucked up by the door. I feel like they've got their arms crossed. There is a bandage tied around their forearm. And Travis, where are you?
In my pocket.
I feel like since I'm a bunny, mm-hmm. I'm probably on the table with the map, just kind of like hopping around. here's a question that I guess I can answer, but I'll leave it to everyone for a vote. You know how bunnies just like poop wherever they are?
Yeah.
Does Travis...
I wish you didn't. I hope you wouldn't.
Or does the transformation do something to his metabolism and food? You know what I mean?
Here's my thing. I do think that Travis, like, be having a human mind, does have the ability to control where and when he poops, but he doesn't tell anyone that.
Disgusting.
Oh, man.
Yuck.
That's so fucking good. Yeah, okay.
So this entire adventure, whenever Travis is an animal, he's just been, like, we're to assume all these conversations, he has also been shitting.
Not all. I think bunny, yes.
Bunny, yes, because bunnies poop constantly, right?
Isn't that's that their weird? Whole
thing. It is.
I guess I didn't know that. I didn't know that. I've never had a rabbit or anything like that.
Apparently you can litter train them, which is weird to me because, like, straight up they do just poop constantly.
Yeah, so I think, you know, Travis is just like, I mean, he could litter train himself. It would be simple.
Yeah, like, just go.
So much work. Why not just say, well, I'm a rabbit. Rabbits poop everywhere. You've never been a rabbit. You don't know.
Yeah.
So yeah, Travis is up on the table looking at the map as well. We pull out through the windows at the rear of the ship, at the back of the captain's quarters, and we see the Uhuru as it moves off into the distance towards the next adventure. And that is the end of our Ungoni arc. Sky Jacks.
Campaign Skyjacks is a One-Shot Network production. For more information, be sure to follow us on Twitter at CampaignPod for updates about live shows and other events we might be doing. You can find more great gaming shows over at OneShotPodcast.com. Jonnet Kessler was played by Tyler Davis. who can be found on Twitter and Instagram at Tyler A. Dave. Gable was played by Liz Anderson, who can be found on Twitter at LizAnderson__. Or on her podcast, Paired. Travis Madigo was played by Johnny O'Mara, who can be found on Twitter at Johnny in Briefs or on his podcast, Dilettante Ball. I am James D'Amato, your host and game master. You can find me on Twitter at OneShotRPG or on my other podcast, One Shot. The original music featured in this production was composed and performed by Arnie Parrott. You can find Arnie on Twitter at ArnePArrott. And you can find more of his work at atptunes.com. This episode was edited by Casey Tony, who can be found on Twitter at Casey Pony, spelled CaseyPoney, or on his own podcast, Neoscum. Our logo was designed by Fiona Shea, who can be found on Twitter at Fiona Pup. The world of Sphere was inspired in part by the music of the Decemberists and the card game Illimat, property of Together Studios. The game used in this production is a modified version of the Genesis role-playing system that was created by a talented group of game designers who were fired by a private equity firm owning Fantasy Flight Games. There are no kings. Take flight, heroes.
Health to the strangers who've ever been kind, and once for our friends ne'er to rise. Twice to the dearest we're leaving behind, who know we can never deny the call of the sky.
Do you love Star Wars but kind of wish you didn't? Then join us on the Expounded Universe podcast as we read through all the old Star Wars novels that took the galaxy far, far away that you know and love and turned it into a place where Han Solo can punch a giant otter and Luke Skywalker almost gets eaten by a giant gold-plated pillar of Dinty Moore beef stew. Did you like Princess Leia? Well, too bad! Now she's a space racist! Don't believe me? You'll just have to listen to find out on Expounded Universe.